is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, February 27, 2020. I'm Buster Olney, back in Bristol, Taylor Schwing. Taylor, how are you doing today?
Oh, you know, up late, watching my Maryland Terrapins, forgetting my laptop on the coffee table. It's been an interesting morning.
I didn't say a word. I didn't say we're taping a little bit later than what we planned, but that's okay. It's a long season, right? Spring training.
Yeah.
We're just trying to get some reps, right? The key is you don't let it affect you as we go forward.
Absolutely. Self-accountability, too. That's why I brought it up. I want to be held accountable by you, by the listeners, by Tim Kirchin, everyone. I deserve it.
Yeah, you still have a perfect record in 2020 because it's only spring training. All right, some of the notes from yesterday. Giancarlo Stanton may miss the start of the season. He has a grade one strain in his right calf, according to manager Aaron Boone. The hits just keep on coming for the Yankees. Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Braves, addressed the status of Freddie Freeman, who had elbow surgery last fall and wasn't comfortable the other day. Give a listen.
Dr. Olczyk said this is
to be expected. He's not concerned. It's just activity. Sometimes it'll flare up, but not concerned. Just give it a little time to rest, and again, should be back in the lineup playing. You know, if you ask Freddie today, he thought he was going to play tomorrow. So we said, look, let's talk to Dr. Olczyk and just make sure. And the fact that we're sitting here in February, we don't need to rush this thing at all. So, but if you did ask him, he'd say, I'm ready to play tomorrow, which he actually did say that to me today.
So what a relief for Braves fans. By the way, that reference to Dr. James Olczyk, who did the surgery on Freeman's elbow. Javier Baez did yesterday what Javier Baez tends to do.
And folding chairs outside the dugouts here in the spring as that ball is walloped to left. Way back there and gone. A home run. He got all of it. And the Cubs lead 1-0.
Shows you the value of power, right? Three singles to load the bases last inning, but they failed to score here with two outs. One big swing of the bat, and the Cubs are on the board.
Homer off. Royals pitcher Scott Barlow. Baez with a long one.
It was great to hear the voice of Len Casper and Jim DeShays on the Cubs television network. The Astros played in Port St. Lucie yesterday. George Springer was heckled by fans as he came up for his first at-bat, but that wasn't the most notable thing that happened in this game. How about Miles Straw, the speedster, who's showing some power this pop?
Possible decisions.
Miles Straw sends one to left field. This ball carrying pretty well. Straw hits another home run. Miles Straw looks into the dugout, didn't hit a home run last year, and has two already on the spring. The speed guy showing some pop.
But I was pretty happy with what I saw.
I'm going to work through a few things. Can be bad early on in spring. I know you're working on a lot, though. We've even talked about it. Will you tell me some of the things that you've been working on? There goes Miles.
Oh, here he goes.
Going for an inside the park home run. Miles Straw hits one out, and now an inside the park home run. The fastest Astro circles the bases.
Miles Straw.
Yeah, there's moves, and then there's moving like Miles Straw. As soon as he recognizes that ball down, getting past the center fielder, he turns on the jets and drops into sixth gear. Off to the races.
Oh, almost lost the wheel.
That, of course, in the Astros television network. Yeah, he had a home run out of the park on his first plate appearance. And then that second plate appearance, Julia Morales, the Astros sideline reporter, was doing an in-game interview when Straw had a sinking liner. The one underneath the glove of the center fielder got past him. So he hits two home runs in an unconventional manner. We'll be talking with Tim Kirchin about what he's seen in spring training so far this year and the ugly first outing for Edwin Diaz. Before we get to that, be sure to check out another episode of The Low Post. Zach talks to the Lakers' Jared Dudley about the Kobe Bryant Memorial and what the last month has been like inside the Lakers' locker room. Jared Dudley is his great, candid self. It's a very interesting conversation. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Scene heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchin on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchin covers baseball for ESPN in most springs. That means going to every camp, Tim. But last spring, Bryce Harper sabotaged that for you, right? Like, he impacted your life to a high degree.
Yes, and this year, the sign-stealing scandal is going to kill me. My goal is always to see all 30 teams. If I make it to 25, it'll be a miracle. It'll be more likely I'm going to make it to 20, given my schedule, because I got trapped doing that. A hugely important story, Buster. We all acknowledge that, but it has really crimped my style as far as seeing as many teams as I can possibly see, because I was trapped doing one story for 12 days.
Yeah, and just to be clear, last year it was Bryce Harper because he wasn't signed, and I know you and I both had duty in Phillies camp for so many days when we were waiting for him to show up. Like, he was just going to arrive and say, hey, yeah, give me a contract, I'm ready to sign. It wasn't going to ever happen that way, but yeah, we staked out the Phillies camp a lot last year. All right, so among the camps you have hit, you're out in Arizona. Tell me some interesting conversations, things you've seen in the camps you've hit this week.
Well, I did the Dodgers yesterday, and I know this is easy to say, Buster, but man, do they have a great thing going there. The attitude of those players, as it should be, is about as good as you can possibly see. And I talked to like all their star players yesterday, and I was really taken by one thing yesterday, that Mookie Betts came in, and I'm sure this is an old story by now, but he came in and spoke, addressed the team in front of everyone by himself his first day in camp. And every guy I talked to was absolutely dazzled by how articulate he was and how important it was for him to address the team. And I haven't seen that very often, where one player says, is it okay if I talk to the team on the first day? And it wasn't like him saying, hey, I've won a World Series and you guys haven't, let me tell you what this is all about. It was just him trying to acclimate himself to the team and tell everyone, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but all I care about is winning. It was really interesting, the players that I spoke to, how amazed they were that Mookie Betts would make that kind of a gesture and then handle it so well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I talked to a general manager of another team right after the Dodgers finished that trade, and he made the point that I've been borrowing ever since, that it was really important for the Dodgers to get a breath of fresh air, so to speak, after pushing the rock back up the hill in recent winters.
Right. And I saw it with every guy I spoke to yesterday. The attitude, again, is so good there. Clayton Kershaw was in a tremendous mood yesterday, which is not unusual. But David Price could not have been happier in his situation. And I guess this is what happens when you've been waiting for the perfect deal to come along. It came along. Now they go to spring training with virtually no weaknesses and a great look at everything. So I left thinking I loved the Dodgers before because of obvious reasons, and I like them even more now given how together everybody is about the season ahead.
You also were in Goodyear. You saw the Cincinnati Reds, a lot of expectations there, and you saw the Indians, who share the facility there with the Reds. A lot of questions around the Indians about whether or not they're going to trade Francisco Lindor during the course of this season. Tell me your takeaway thoughts from those two teams.
Well, I was really impressed with the Reds. I mean, they are demonstrably better offensively. They were not a good offensive team last year, but if Joey Votto comes back and is the really good hitter that he's always been his entire career, and you add in Castellanos and Moustakas and all the other people they added to that team, that is one deep team. Now, they need to go get a backup shortstop before the spring is over, but there's a lot to like about the Reds right now, and I really was impressed with the attitude in that camp also, that, all right, now we're in a position in a winnable division to really do some damage. As for the Indians, of course, I checked around about Francisco Lindor, and I was told again what I think we all know, Buster, the deals in place for Lindor were not even close to being what the Indians could have accepted for Francisco Lindor. That the Dodgers, they didn't exactly make an offer, but the names that were thrown around the Dodgers for Lindor wasn't even close to getting that deal done. Not even close. So this is what I think we all believe. They're going to start the year with Lindor. They're going to try to win the World Series with him. And if things totally fall apart by July, which I don't see happening, they will trade him. Otherwise, I think they'll trade him after the season, but they're going to try to win with him Their pitching is really good, but I still worry, do they have enough punch in the outfield to beat the Twins and to make the playoffs?
You and I don't care about spring training results, but I think that we would agree that there are exceptions at times to that rule, and one of them would be a player who has really struggled the year before, goes out for his first outings and gets pounded and doesn't get good results, because you wonder about the impact on that player's confidence. And I was thinking about that yesterday when I saw the crooked number put up by Edwin Diaz, the closer for the Mets, who is such an important guy for that Tim team. And I you know, said all winter I thought he was going to be a great bounce back candidate, because you could see last year that generally speaking, he still has his stuff. But he went out yesterday, an inning, three hits, two runs, and he acknowledged afterward that he was a little anxious in his first outing of spring, and that was a red flag for me. What about for you?
Yeah, and I'm with you, Buster. I rarely pay attention to spring training statistics unless, of course, it's a young guy trying to make a team, trying to see if he's ready for this. You know, Ken Griffey Jr., they didn't want him to make the team his second spring training. They said, you're too young. We want you to go down. And he was so great that spring training, they had no choice but to keep him. And it was the right thing to do because he was so good. But I rarely pay attention to these things unless a guy's coming back from an injury or something. But Diaz is different because he was a crushed man last year, and they need him to return to form if they're going to make a run in that division. And for him to get off to that kind of a start and be as decorated as he is as a closer and still be jittery inside about pitching in a spring training game, that's more than a red flag for me. And he's got, I'm sure, a lot of work to do to get his head together to be ready to pitch on a high level in the big league.
Yeah, it seems weird to say, but like his next outing for me is almost must watch. Like I want to see how he responds, because you don't want him to start going down that rabbit hole again and falling apart. He's too important for the Mets for that to happen this early. But you hope that the first outing was just a blip. Yesterday, the Yankees lost another guy, Giancarlo Stanton, out with a grade one calf strain. Seems almost certain that he's not going to be ready to start the year. And I reached out to some folks in the organization, Tim, and last night, for the first time, I did hear a layer of frustration, like, really? Again, we lost Luis Severino. We already lost Aaron Hicks. You know, James Paxton is out. And now, even before we get to February, we lose Giancarlo Stanton. This is not a major injury. He's not projected to be out for a very long time, but it's just in keeping with what they experienced last year. And Tim, you know this, they spent the winter changing their protocol, their medical protocol. They shook up their staff a little bit. They did some different things. And yet here they are again, losing players. And like the Severino injury, I don't think the Stanton injury would necessarily have an impact on the Yankees in the regular season, because you know, they didn't really have him that much last year, just 59 at-bats, and they still led the majors in runs scored. But the big thing, I think, on Stanton is they got to start getting some return on investment. These are his prime years, and he's owed $244 million moving forward.
Yeah, and this doesn't follow, Buster. I'm confused by this, how anyone that big, that strong, that athletic can get hurt this often. I think it proves again just how difficult baseball is to play when you hurt something. You can't just tape it up and go out there and play. If you can't run, you can't play. If your hands are injured in any way, you can't play. But this is amazing how often this guy has gotten hurt. Now they won 100 games last year and hit 300 homers basically without him. So they know they can win without him. But you're right. They paid a lot of money to get him, and they need to get some sort of return here. And I'm not sure when that's coming. Hopefully for his sake, he'll be ready soon after the season starts. But this sounds like last year, and for Stanton and the Yankees, and that's not a good thing to think about injury-wise.
No, and it may all be coincidence, and a lot of this stuff may not be related. You did say something that caught my ear when you talked about a guy that big, that strong. I got to tell you, Tim, as I've gotten older and I've seen, you know, how players hold up physically, those guys who are really, really big, that physicality just kind of makes me cringe in terms of them staying healthy. What about you?
Yeah, look, it's not a game for a really big man, okay? Especially when you're a position player. I've done all the research on guys 6'6 and taller, and even though Stanton's only 6'5, it's a tough game to play when you're that tall. And when you're that big, eventually you're going to break down. Still, there's no excuse for anyone getting hurt this often like Stanton, and I know he's tremendously frustrated by this. I know he really wants to play and help a team that he hasn't helped much so far, but I totally agree. You look at all the big men in baseball history, position players, there aren't many of them who were really good and played a really long time. But baseball is not a game built for really big people.
That's the same conversation we're having about Zion Williamson, right? Like someone that big and that athletic and that and moves that much and the G-forces involved with a body like that.
Right. It's much better to be 143 pounds like me, Buster. There are no moving parts at this size.
There you go. I got a Bleacher tweet for you. First off, you got to guess what state this guy's from. Jordan Michael. He's at Live Free or Die 603, Tim. What state is he from? Oh, come on.
No,
that is a layup.
Get this.
Come on,
Stop
Tim.
Yelling at me. New Hampshire, Vermont.
Yes.
Yes.
No. Oh, yeah, you just ruined it by saying Vermont. You had it first.
But then I thought you were milking cows in Vermont. There must be a clue there. I got it right the first time.
Yes, and I'll ignore your second answer. I'm kind of offended by that because we're not even close to New Hampshire people, okay? But it's on every license plate, Live Free or Die. Anyway, his question is, Stanton had 59 at-bats in which he had .288 with three homers and 24 strikeouts in 2019. His WAR was 0.4. At what point did the Yankees start to think about moving him? Tim, I'm going to give you a first shot at this question, and if you don't answer it right, I'm going to yell at you again.
Well, how can they move him with that much money involved? He's not
Ding.
A movable player.
Exactly.
Is that right?
100%. That's exactly right. They can't move him.
He's injury prone. He makes way too much money, and they would want young people back in return. And what we're learning again in this spring, Buster, is teams are not willing to trade young players anymore unless it's the perfect deal. And I think the Yankees, for lack of a better term, are stuck with Stanton, and they're just going to have to hope he gets healthy and produces.
All right. There was a story yesterday in the New York Post by the esteemed Joel Sherman mentioning that Major League Baseball is cracking down in their conversations with teams on the use of pine tar. You and I know that although there is a rule against foreign substances in baseball, you and I can watch games every day and see six or seven different pitchers in any given game using stuff. Just look for the shiny spot on their forearm. Everybody knows it's going on. Every pitcher knows it's going on. Every umpire knows it's going on. Every manager knows it's going on. But there's kind of been a gentleman's agreement for a long time because everyone understands that pitchers do this to have a tacky feel of the baseball. But in the Post story yesterday, it was mentioned that, Chris Young, who is basically, stepped in with, Joe Torre and working with teams about, rules, has told teams in essence, like, hey, we're gonna deal with this year. And I checked on this last night, Tim. I think the status quo is going to be enforced for this year. I don't think there's any change in the actual enforcement of the rules. The umpires will not be asked to proactively monitor this on their own. They will respond to a manager asking to check, as they always have. You remember that infamous night in Fenway Park when John Farrell went out and reluctantly asked the home plate umpire to check on Michael Pineda, the Yankees, because Michael Pineda had this massive gob of pine tar on his neck. Those situations are very rare. And so what I think has happened this spring is that teams are being reminded, hey, this foreign substance rule is on the book and players are responsible for what's on their bodies. But I don't think culturally that this will change. I don't think the enforcement of the rule will change until they get a tacky surface baseball, which may not be till 2021 or 22. What do you think?
Right. And let's not forget, Buster, I've been told by managers virtually every catcher in the major leagues has some pine tar on his shin guards or somewhere, which he just rubs the ball against it and throws it back to the pitcher. And our pitchers today are so good, Buster. They don't need any help with Pine Tar, given the stuff they have, but they're not even sure what to do with a spot on the ball. Old-time pitchers would get a spot like that and say, wow, I can make this ball do whatever I want now. Today's pitcher doesn't know what to do with a Pine Tar spot or a scuff on the ball. So this is not that big of a deal to me, and I think they should be allowed to use Pine Tar and not to go into too much depth on checking for it, because you're right, it gives them a grip. And we're starting the season on March the 26th this year. The Indians were telling me the other day what their cold weather games look like for a month. It's ridiculous. They're in New York, Minnesota, Cleveland, Detroit. You need Pine Tar to help you get a grip. And I think that the hitters appreciate that it's not going to slip out of the pitcher's hand and hit me in the head. I think everyone thinks it's not a terrible idea to have a little Pine Tar for a good grip.
Now, just back me up on this. Everybody on the field knows this is going on, right? I know the other day Trevor Bauer did an interview with HBO, and it was sort of presented as like this is something new and different. Everybody knows this is going on.
Right. Davey Johnson, who I love, by the way, said a few years ago, turned in a pitcher on another team, doesn't matter what team. And a manager called me to say, I can't believe he did that. Everybody is doing this. And he calls out a team when his team's doing it and every team is doing it. That's just the way the game works.
Yeah, and the reason why they haven't changed the rule, what I've been told in the past is that writing an actual rule is very complicated because you get into volume, degrees. How do you define how much Pine Tar is acceptable and how much sunscreen, bullfrog is acceptable? And that's why I think they're are hoping to defer this down the road until they get a tacky surface baseball like they use in Japan.
Now, last thing, Buster, we are also putting way too much on the umpires anyway. Now we're going to ask them to handle something else. That's enough. I agree.
So the Astros now have been hit by pitches 7 times in 5 games, and a lot of people have taken notice of this. I think there certainly have been instances like yesterday when Alex Bregman was hit by a splitter, when it's not on purpose, but it's getting a lot of attention because of what happened during the course of the winter and what guys like Mike Clevenger and Ross Stripling said, suggesting that maybe this would happen. Yesterday, Michael Brantley, the Astros outfielder, talked about the heckling from fans.
Doesn't bother me one way or another. I'm here to play baseball. You know, they can say whatever they want. That's for their fans. But at the same time, when I'm playing with my teammates out there, I have a lot of fun. It's a lot of joy to be with them. And we look forward to playing some good baseball in 2020.
Here was George Springer addressing the same issue.
I'm focused on the pitcher. You know, I know who I have to face. Any of the outside stuff, you just kind of have to just kind of attempt to block it out or hope. But at that point in time, it's whatever's on the field and you play.
Now, Tim, I understand why George answered the question that way, and that may be completely 100% true what he said, but I was watching Is It Bad yesterday, and it was kind of funny. Noah Syndergaard was on the mound for the Mets, and the game was supposed to start at 1:10, and it was 1:09. So when George Springer was announced and he got booed, Syndergaard kind of lingered on the mound waiting for 1:10 to happen, and George has this little smile on his face when the boos are coming in, and on the first pitch that Syndergaard threw, George swung so hard that he fell down. He dropped to one knee. And I thought, yep, that's a subtle way for saying, okay, let's go. What do you think?
Yeah, and we got to get used to these hit batters because we're going to bring up every time anybody gets hit, which is not a particularly healthy thing to follow every day, but it's part of it. And these Astros are going to get booed every step of the way. Every player I've spoken to this spring says the same thing. The Astros have no idea what they're in for. They're going to get booed wherever they go. It's going to be a distraction, and it's going to affect them. However, Buster, you know this. Great players figure out a way to silence everyone by getting 3 hits in a game or throwing 6 shutout innings. The Astros are still a really good team, and my guess is they'll work their way through this, but this is not going to be easy for them. They're going to see it wherever they go, every new city, same questions. And I had a player ask me yesterday, when's the first time they're going to snap at the media for bringing this up every time? I think it's going to be early in the season because they're going to be tired of it by mid-April. That's for sure.
No doubt. In fact, I think it's going to happen in spring training at some point, right? Because it does seem like when Altuve got hit by that breaking ball on his foot the other day and now he's asked the question, it does feel like it's going to get a little bit silly at some point. All right, before we go, let's review. Live free or die, what state?
New Hampshire. I remember it.
Nice.
10 minutes ago. Ooh. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Tweets for Thursday. First up, we got Matt at Kaya King Smith. He asks, George Springer, getting booed and heckled brings up an interesting twist. Do you see the Astros struggling in the early part of the season while they adjust to the pressure and the chanting from fans? Enough to hurt their postseason chances?
I don't know. And I got to tell you that I've heard that same question from a lot of players with other teams. They've sort of been musing over what the Astros are dealing with now and what they're going to be dealing with. And they wonder if it's going to be a factor. I was talking with Jeff yesterday about it, about George Springer and Jose Altuve and whether or not this will grate on them at some point. We'll just have to wait and see.
Ethan Garber at Touch My Mullet. I would touch Ethan Garber's mullet if presented to me, just for the record. Will Yasiel Puig sign before the end of spring training, or will he end up being signed by a team who suffers a big injury midseason?
Ethan, I think he signs during spring training. There'll be some team that'll develop a need through an injury or some other issue. And history shows over the last 10 years that those guys who wait to sign into the season, they struggle. And it would be smart for him to get into a camp as soon as possible and play.
Ella at Ella Mortadella asks, after a much hyped but disappointing 2019, how much pressure is on the Phillies' new manager, Joe Girardi, to get them into the playoffs?
No, I think he's good. I mean, he's in the first year of his multi-year deal. I think the more pressure's on Matt Klentak, the general manager. We saw last fall that Klentak's preference was to keep Gabe Kapler's manager, John Middleton, who runs the Phillies, overruled that and brought in Joe Girardi. And let's face it, with the amount of money they spent the last couple of years, all that money on Bryce Harper, there's an expectation to get to the playoffs. So I think that at this point, the person on the hot seat in that organization is Matt.
Last one for today, Frenzy Farm at Joseph Trumbo asks, can Tommy La Stella become the player he was last year? That would be an underrated boost for the Angels.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a guy who's going to thrive because of this new rule that they have that relievers have to face at least three batters because he's a really good platoon hitter. In other words, he's really good against right-handed pitching. And if you're Joe Maddon, you can just hold him in lying in wait. And then when the other team brings in a right-hander, say to face Mike Trout, after Trout bats, then La Stella gets to face a right-hander. That's an advantage that he's going to have all year. I think he's going to have an excellent year for them.
Good stuff, Buster. That is tweets for Wednesday. And just a couple things to note before we get out of here. Of course, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Divisional previews, they are coming on Tuesday. AL East is first up. NL West on Thursday. We've gotten a couple tweets that are like, oh, you know, you don't really talk about all the teams. Well, Buster, we are grinding. We are going to hit on all 30 teams over the next couple weeks. So do enjoy. Tell your friends if you're like, oh, you know, I'm an Orioles guy. You guys don't talk a ton of O's. Well, this will be your chance to hear Buster chat with someone, talk a little Orioles on Tuesday. And we've shortened up the episodes a little bit and compared to years past. And we got to say, we can tell that most people are enjoying it. Lots of people are listening to the entire thing, which is very cool to see. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, we got some internal metrics, excited about those. And thanks to listeners for their response this year. It's been pretty cool. I'm with you on talking about other teams. Let's face it, the Astros have dominated the conversation. It's why, you know, when you and I talked about the structure of the podcast today, we're like, well, let's hear Tim and what he got from other camps. And then we'll eventually get to the Astros thing, because that will be a dominant conversation all year. And there are going to be days when it feels a little bit stale. But absolutely. Well, that's it for today. My thanks to Tim and to Taylor. And I will talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.